Shivaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Seventh Canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the chapter 3, the title of this chapter is Hiranyakashipu's plan to, the title of this chapter is Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. And the text number is 12. All right, text number 12. Ti shushrama nirbandham tapak paramam atishtha paramam astita. Okay, vidhats sabanan taram yuktam svayam tri bhuvaneshvara. Translation and then the purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai. O Lord, we have heard from reliable sources that in order to obtain your post, Hiranyakashipu is now engaged in severe austerity. You are the master of the three worlds. Please, without delay, take whatever steps you deem appropriate. Do you repeat this part as well? Finished now? Okay. Purport. In the material world, a servant is provided for by the master, but is always planning how to capture the master's post. Yeah, some are laughing. There have been many instances of this in history, especially in India during the Mohammedan rule. Many servants, by plans and devices, took over the posts of their masters. It is learned from Chaitanya literature that one big zamindar, Subhudhi Raya, kept a Mohammedan boy as a servant. Of course, he treated the boy as his own child, and sometimes, when the boy would steal something, the master would chastise him by striking him with a cane. There was a mark on the boy's back from this chastisement. Later, after the boy, by crooked means, becomes Husan Shah, Nawab of Bengal, one day his wife saw the mark on his back and inquired about it. The Nawab replied that in his childhood he had been a servant of Subhudhi Raya, who had punished him because of some mischievous activities. Upon hearing this, the Nawab's wife immediately became agitated and requested her husband to kill Subhudhi Raya. Nawab Hussein Shah, of course, was very grateful to Subhudhi Raya and therefore refused to kill him. But when his wife requested him to turn Subhudhi Raya into a Mohammedan, the Nawab agreed. Taking some water from his water pot, he sprinkled it upon Subhuti Raya and declared that Subhuti Raya had now become a Mohammedan. The point is that this Nawab had been an ordinary menial servant of Subhuti Raya, but was somehow or other able to occupy the supreme post of the Nawab of Bengal. This is the material world. Everyone is trying to become master through various devices, although everyone is servant of his senses. Following this system, a living entity, although servant of his senses, tries to become master of the whole universe. Hiranyakashipu was a typical example of this, and Brahma was informed by the demigods of his intentions. This interesting verse, Prabhupada responds to it by telling a story, a real life story from Chaitanya literature. So the idea is that because we're governed by our senses, that we only externally pretend to be servants in order to get something from the master. And we do this by various tricky ways, like being the most humble is submissive, subjective servant, by being the most expert servant, by imitating the master so that the other servants will think that we look, they may mistake us for being the master because we've become so good at imitating him. That's mostly the person who's fooled is us. The demigods want to tell Brahma that Hiranyakashipu had an ulterior motive, but Brahma would already know this. This is the nature of material world. We all have motives, but Krishna and our spiritual masters are kind, even though they know that we have material motive, and that material motive is not just to become Lord Brahma, or we want to become even more master of everything. I used to be a Sankirtan leader many years ago. I had this one boy that joined with me in Texas, in the USA, and in Dallas. He was from my high school. He was a little younger than me. And I remember we would go out in vans. You probably still do this. And a few of us in a van. And we would, at the time, we were collecting funds. And so, of course, every day there would be some competition as to who collected the most or who distributed the most books. And then, like you do here, we would announce them in the morning and everyone would go, Jai, and we had our biggest distributors. So the devotee from my high school joined with me. I was a Sankirtan leader and I came back to the van early. I would usually go out for less time myself and be there to, you know, in case they needed me for something to help them. And so I found this boy. I think his name was, I haven't seen him in a few years, Vishnu Dvora, that was his name. And he was sitting there in the van. He wasn't doing anything. He wasn't out. In fact, you could tell he'd never even gotten out of the van. When I left, he must have just walked around the block or something, went back to the van. So he was sitting there, and so I inquired, Vishnu, you know, why are you sitting in the van? As you know, at least go out for a little while. He goes, no. He goes, this way, you see, it's really hard to be the biggest on Sankirtan, but if I don't go out, then I'll do zero. And when the women hear the scores, they'll hear that I did zero and they'll feel very sorry for me. And this way, because it's difficult to be the, you know, the biggest collector, I'll be the smallest collector and I'll get, you know, attention that way. And I thought, wow, he's really thought this through. It's very clever. He's very smart. I thought, that had never even occurred to me. It's like such lazy intelligence. Is if your goal was, of course, it kind of made me feel a little transparent about my own goals. There I was working hard to try to do big, and he was, you know, he'd figured out how to do it without working hard. Get the same attention. So, anyway, I'm not sure why I told you that, but oh, I know why I told you. Because the person who we mainly fool is ourselves. The Master's not really fooled. He knows that we have material ambitions. He can see that we're imitating behavior, or we're that we mistake becoming materially qualified, even if that material qualification is the accoutrements of appearing like a devotee. We learn how devotees walk and talk and sing and dress and speak, and we learn all those things. So those are some kind of external. And when we can appear, it's Western devotees, they, at least, I don't know if they still do this as much, but at first, I remember myself included, we would think that if we could dress and talk and act like we were Indian, then that would make us advanced. And so we'd try to imitate you, the ones of you who are in Indian bodies. We'd try to imitate you. And we'd even try to speak with a little accent. And of course, I'm sure you probably thought we were totally ridiculous. You probably still do. And it doesn't equal anything. It just equals material achievement. It doesn't qualify you for anything, except for it does qualify you in a way to get some association from devotees. They would criticize Prabhupada that he had all these Westerners who were obviously didn't grow up in Vaishnava families or even pious families, and he had made them Brahmins and they dressed, and so he made some of them sannyasis, and they acted externally as if they were devotees, but how could they be? A couple of years ago or a few years ago they were eating meat and running around getting intoxicated and who knows what else. So, but Prabhupada didn't seem to be so worried about it. But it can become a problem. The reason why he wasn't so worried about it is because if you can at least adopt the kind of civilized external behavior so that you can be in the society of devotees, even if you have so many ulterior motives for doing so, and even if you fooled yourself into thinking that you're free from material are you into thinking whatever, whatever way you've deceived yourself. It's easier for me to tell you a story about a friend of mine because I could see how he had deceived himself, but I can't really see how I've deceived myself. So I can't tell you so much about that, but I know that I have. So, but generally speaking, a material achievement, whether it's in a yogic system or in the external behavior of a devotee or our ISKCON culture, it doesn't equal material advance. I mean, it doesn't equal spirit. It does equal material advancement. It does not equal spiritual advancement. We tend to confuse that. I remember my own spiritual master telling me after a few years that I was a good worker. And I thought, how could he say that? I thought I was a good devotee, and he just said, well, yeah, you're a good worker. So it was kind of disturbing to me and made me try a little harder to imitate him. So eventually I could overtake his position, but so far I've been unsuccessful. He's lying there listening to this now, thinking, yeah, I know this. You're such a rascal. So I'll read you the verse again. And it's the 12th text. O Lord, we have heard from reliable sources that in order to obtain your post, Hiranyakashipu is now engaged in severe austerity. You are the master of the three worlds. Please, without delay, take whatever steps you deem appropriate. So, does anyone want to ask me a question or ask a question about the verse or make a comment or something? Maybe you can get me to say something else. But no? Mm-hmm. So I should leave now. And you'll all feel cheated. All right, well, maybe I'll ask you a question then. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada. Prabhupada once said that imitation of a good thing is okay.
Imitation of a good thing is okay? Yeah,
so
it's
could you
good.
Please, maybe
imitating may be as close as we can get. It is a good thing. It's also, they say, it's the highest form of flattery. The imitation is the highest form of flattery. Imitation is a good thing. I was just simply pointing out that we have to be careful in imitating, that we don't deceive ourselves so much that actually we have obtained, that we still realize that there's a distinction between the real thing, you know, the original and the thing that we're imitating. And we really don't have a choice. I mean, we're stuck in the material situation. We're controlled by our senses. We were laughing yesterday. I was reciting something I read from Prabhupada Nectar. I can't remember which devotee told the story, but it was in early on in in Los Angeles, and one of the devotees who hadn't got a chance to ask Prabhupada a personal question snuck in. Actually, I think it was, not that it matters so much, but I think it was in San Francisco. He snuck in after all the devotees left, and he wanted to ask a question. He was kind of thinking, he was describing this himself, and he said he was kind of thinking in his mind that there was some, still kind of this idea that Prabhupada had some kind of special mystical magic that he could like give you some, you know, powerful yogic weapon or something, or empower you in some way by, so the devotee said, you know, Prabhupada, I really have difficulty controlling my tongue, and could you give me something to help me with this? Thinking, you know, Prabhupada would give him some, you know, magic powder or something. And so Prabhupada gave his answer that you can control the tongue by honoring prasadam and by chanting Hare Krishna and by speaking about Krishna. And the devotee goes, well, but I really have trouble controlling my tongue. Prabhupada stuck his tongue out and said, yes, I know, I have one too. So, your question was, kind of a comment, you were saying I was being a little rough on the idea of imitating as a way to learn. But I think it's a good way to learn, by imitating. And, I guess I was making the point that we really don't have a choice. We're in the material condition, so we have to use whatever's available to us. And we see an elevated devotee, then, you know, imitate his behavior. It's a good thing. You know, like me, I've been a student like my whole life, since I was like 24. If you could see my hair, you'd see it's all white now, and I'm old and fat and So after a while, imitation is like, you know, all right, you've been imitating for like years and years and years. When are you going to actually show something, do something? So, yeah, imitating is good. But at some point we have to see that it's not, it can't be hollow, and it can't, and like in this case, of Hiranyakashipu, the motivation can't be that, you know, I'm going to imitate so that I can become the master. And it's warning us that this is our mentality. We have this mentality. And Prabhupada is just sort of what's that? How do you say that expression? Matter of factly saying that this is how it is. We all want to become the masters, and this is our motivation for serving. That devotee yesterday who gave classes, one of my god brothers, he was saying he made that prayer. I want to become, what was it? He touched his head to the tree. He said, I want to become a renounced preacher. And then he actually slipped and said, I want to become a renowned preacher. Or maybe he didn't slip. And he has become a renowned preacher. I mean, ultimately, when we begin devotional service, our motivations are material. So we're doing it for some material reason. Prabhupada's just stating matter-of-factly that that's how it is. So we have to get beyond that. How do we get beyond that? And we get beyond it one way, as Prabhupada said, just by doing it, by imitating devotees, we get the opportunity to associate with devotees. And by associating with devotees, we become purified of our anartas. And what externally appears becomes the truth. It becomes the truth that we are what we appear to be. So that's what Prabhupada was saying when they were criticizing. He was saying, well, it's all right. If they behave like devotees, then eventually, by purification and by association, they will become what they appear. They will become devotees. So we just have to make sure in our cases that we're not content with ourselves appearing devotees, appearing to be devotees. Dattatreya and I were talking this morning about yesterday's class, and we were talking about the danger of making prayers in front of the deities. And so I laughingly said, because we were kind of joking about Shaunika Rishi's prayer, and so I like kind of jokingly made a prayer. Well, I would pray for Krishna to make a complete fool out of me. So, and then I was thinking in my mind, well, they're nearby. Maybe I shouldn't have said that out loud. And then I walked down here, and who was the Prabhu who told me I had to give class? I said, darn, it hear me. great. So, ultimately, we have to get Krishna's mercy, so we chant, even though we chant we try to improve, we try to avoid offenses, we try to associate with devotees, and we try not to commit offenses to devotees, and we imitate behavior in order to stay in the association of devotees. And even though our motivation may be that, oh, I want to become a renowned preacher, or I want to become I want to be the one who everybody worships or who everybody looks up to. That's me. I'm special. I just haven't been recognized yet. If somehow or other, even though our motivations are so mixed for staying in devotional service or for coming to devotional service, and even though our methods are so crude that all we can do is just kind of parrot the behavior of a devotee, and then that we're so unabashedly shameless that we actually trick ourselves into thinking, yeah, I'm looking good, I look like a devotee. I'm advanced now. That in the end, all that really matters is that we get, somehow or other, we get some association. Ultimately, Aranyakashipu comes into Lord Nrisimhadev's presence and slain by him. It's one of his three births as a demon. Or he's Jai, right? Jaya. So Prabhupada explains that even by the demoniac mentality, one can come close to Krishna. So whatever it takes, whatever it takes to get association, that'll help us become devotees. that are pure and automatically will become purified. So I guess in a sense we don't have to so much worry about, well, am I just imitating or am I really getting purified? This will just happen, so the imitation will become real. So you're right. I shouldn't. You shouldn't have said that was a bad thing or inferred that it was. Somebody else want to help me along? Come on, I know you all know all this stuff. Or have I already used up all the time? Should I stop? No. You guys are merciless. You won't ask me a question. You won't let me off of here. Oh, dots. Yeah, great. Thanks. What's your question? What?
What if I don't want to actually see what my what's motivating me in my
endeavor? If you don't want to?
No. What if for one reason or another I really don't want to see that?
Yeah, well, that's pretty much our situation. I don't know. I know what you're getting at is that we should be authentic. We shouldn't lie to ourselves. We should try to make the effort to rid ourselves of anarthas, and we should be honest about it. Something along those lines. Is that kind of what you're getting at? And if we don't do that, then what? We rot inside those red apples that are from last year, and they're all shiny and red, but you open them and inside they're all brown. You do? Let's assume you do. Okay, yeah, I'll assume you want to become Krishna conscious.
At some level.
Right.
I want to be Krishna conscious. I want to be self-realized.
But you're right. You can't help the other things that are going on.
Like when Trunaka Rishi Prabhu,
yeah,
was praying to become a renounced preacher.
Okay.
And then Krishna showed him that his desire was to be a renowned preacher.
Yeah.
So that may or may not be something that he would want to see. And if I was in that position, and I say to myself, Krishna, I want to be your pure devotee, but whatever you do, don't really show me what is motivating me, because I can't bear to see it.
Yeah. Can relate to that.
I mean, that seems to be close to what my own psychological experience in the practice of Krishna consciousness is. I mean, I don't want to see those things that
gross.
Krishna must show me in order for me to become self-realized. For me to be self-realized, I have to see.
That's why it takes so long, because we really don't want it. Actually, it doesn't take a long time to become Krishna conscious. Just take some, willingness to see. So, what he's saying is, the truth is we really don't want to see the gory, bloody guts of who we really are. What really motivates us, but if we don't clean up that, then we just keep glossing over the infected parts of us. Is that what you're saying? That what will happen? Yeah, well.
And to connect it with the point of imitation, I can, if I imitate.
You become like me.
if I imitate, then ultimately I must be, Krishna will show me those things that I really don't want to see.
Yeah, right.
And
that's what
we
were saying.
I can come to the
I don't know. Apparently so. But I think at the same time we have to engage in the process of anartha nirvritti. And if we don't, then we run the risk of becoming sahajya imitators of devotional. And we run the risk of imitating advanced states of devotional service, of devotional consciousness that we've not achieved, and contaminating ourselves to the point where in this lifetime we won't be able. It's just like a loss of innocence. Once someone loses innocence, it's very difficult to become innocent again. So if one skips over the stage of anartha nirvritti and imitates the behavior of a raganuga bhakti and engages in behavior or hearing is on a level that one has not achieved, then they run the risk of losing, of it becoming false, and at the same time you lose an innocence that you can't go back from easily, most likely not in this lifetime. So that's a very good point. If you begin imitating behavior that's so far above, or if you leave out the stage of removing anartas, then you may actually trash this lifetime that you've got by becoming contaminated and becoming uncontaminated from imitating levels of devotional service that are for actual pure souls, very dangerous activity. Something we shouldn't do. So that would be a caution against imitating, and a vote for looking at the material desires and forcing ourselves, or getting some friend, like he was saying. He was saying that poem, that poet, the Irish poet, Scottish poet, okay, but since I'm Irish, that, oh Lord, grant me the vision to see myself from as others see me. And also they have that one who praises you is your enemy, and one who tells you the truth is actually your friend. Of course, people can be kind of vicious. Even devotees can be kind of vicious. And so I know my mother's got this big thing about telling the truth. But as she gets older, she's less and less concerned whether or not people are really hurt by the truth. I tried to explain to her the concept that if you're trying to help someone, you don't have to. I mean, you might want to tell the truth, but you might want to present it in a way that it doesn't completely discourage the person from living, from continuing to live. So Krishna does that as well, and the spiritual master does that. They show us a little bit at a time so that we don't totally become discouraged, and they give us some of our material desires so that we keep trying. But we have a responsibility to look deeper. And that's something I think that my own spiritual master, Satsarup Maharaj, has he's made a contribution through his books to help devotees look at their internal devotional practices and their internal life as a devotee. And it's certainly in our tradition that we should do this, and it's required for us to look within and root out anartas and be honest with ourselves and look at the things that we really don't want to look at and not fool ourselves or allow ourselves to be easily fooled. My mother's idea of what she was telling me. Yeah, you just go there. And this is after 30 years. She still hasn't given up on this. You know, I'm an old man. You'd think by now she'd like give up. Okay, you're a devotee, whatever. But she still hasn't given up. Even when she heard I was coming here, she goes, "Yeah, you just go there." So, because they tell you, you know, they praise you, and then you like being praised. So that's why you go there, and then they just get you to do things. And I was thinking, yeah, well, moms are very intelligent. She's actually right about that. She's probably more right than I want to admit. That, you know, praise me a little and I'll, like, who knows what I'll do for you. Anyway, as you can see, I'm not very Shastric, and just hopefully you got a little something from all my years of misadventure. Does anybody want to ask me anything else before we close? Or make any comments? Correct me on something? Thanks for your help. Thank you, Prabhus. All glories to Radhana Swami and to your temple here. I'm super enlivened to see all of the jumping devotees. And your kirtan is so sweet, and your spiritual master is so sweet, and you're all just really incredible devotees, and you've encouraged me just by seeing you to try again to become like you. So I'll try to imitate what I've seen here, and that'll be my way of flattering, my way of complimenting you, that you've enlivened me. So I'll be throwing my arms up like you do. Doing my best to dance and chant like you. So thank you very much for all those gifts. Jai Srila Prabhupada.